All right, welcome back to the Locked On Jaguars podcast and Locked On Bills podcast, as it is a special crossover Wednesday edition on the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Christopher Thornton. You can find me on Twitter at MrChristopho, and be sure to follow the Locked On Jaguars Twitter handle at Locked On Jaguars. I am joined by Bill Massare from Locked On Bills. Kevin, how you doing?
Doing well, man. Thanks for having me on. Really love these crossovers and this pivotal week. You know, we're getting into the pivotal part of the last six games here.
Pivotal for draft position, maybe.
I know, right?
It'll be interesting. But Kevin, obviously, you're a part of Locked On Bills, but be sure to tell everybody right now where they can find your work on Twitter and the Locked On Bills page.
Absolutely. Yep. Follow our Twitter at Locked On Bills and myself at Kevin Massare, Massare. As always, always look forward to interacting on game days.
So we go, like you said, into this pivotal Bills Jaguars matchup here in the latter half of the season that both teams are exactly where I'm sure we thought they would be going into the season. The Jaguars at the bottom of the AFC South and the Bills at the bottom of the AFC East. So, Kevin, just give me some positives. What are some things that are going well for the Bills right now?
Hey, don't you dare put us below the Jets. I mean, that is... That is blasphemous. We have, obviously, in the AFC East, we have three teams that are... I mean, the Dolphins are sitting there 5-5, but they're no better than these teams we're talking about today, or the Jets. I mean, they got lucky, got some lucky early season wins when Ryan Tannehill was healthy, but that team's not very good. I mean, the Bills are playing great defense. I mean, they went into the week number one rated overall defense and finished after Baltimore-Cincinnati game. They're now second, but now moved up to first in pass D. The team's playing phenomenal defensively. They've pretty much stayed in every game on the defensive side of the ball. Any of these blowouts that you might see, if you check out, hey, let me see what the Bills have done to get to 3-7. The Bills have actually, how about this? They've only played two close games in their, obviously in the first 10. They are both against AFC South opponents. One they should have won in Houston. They were beating them the entire game. Nathan Peterman throws a pick six to lose it, and then throws a pick as he was trying to go down the field to get into field goal range. It was quite miraculous. They took care of that Houston offense, should have won that game. And then they actually did win against Tennessee in another close game. But outside of those two, they've played all blowouts either way. The other two Bills wins were by 20 plus points, and a lot of their losses are just that their offense hasn't been able to keep up. But you will see a better version of this Bills offense with Josh Allen playing, as well as we did it with Matt Barkley playing. Weirdly enough, it was just a Nathan Peterman, Derek Anderson saga. Wasn't very good. So you're going to see a really good defensive team. If their offense isn't, you know, turning the ball over in plus or minus territory for them, and getting behind in games, you're going to definitely see the defense tee off there. They're pretty good turnovers, sacks, pretty much every stat that's out there defensively. It's a solid unit. It's interesting to watch play. I think they're pretty much built in the same mold as the Jaguars.
Yeah, and almost kind of the same way for the Jaguars at this point. The defense is by far still the strong point of this team. And looking at score-wise, there is that stretch towards the beginning of this losing streak where they just got blown out by the Chiefs, I mean, we just saw on Monday Night Football is probably one of the best offenses in the entire NFL, dropping 51 points against the Rams defense, who is pretty good as well. But that was something going in that I knew would be a show for the Jags defense. And they didn't perform as horribly as I thought they would, but Patrick Mahomes was amidst his fiery start, and then they went to Dallas and got absolutely blown out. So it's been up and down. The Jaguars for a while there were kind of sneakily keeping their defense, but this past week against Pittsburgh, although they lost the game, I won't pin this on the defense, and I'll pin it on the offense not being able to do anything for an entire half of football, but we're able to make Big Ben uncomfortable again, getting three interceptions against Ben Roethlisberger again. Jalen Ramsey putting on what might have been one of the best performances of his career against the Steelers and Antonio Brown, who if you go to Pro Football Focus or look at a lot of people, they'll pin the Antonio Brown 78-yard touchdown on Jalen Ramsey, when in effect was not. It was on safety to Sean Gibson, so that kind of skewed the numbers a little bit. But Jalen Ramsey posting his first two-interception game against the or of his career against the Steelers. So the defense is kind of coming off probably one of their best performances of the year. So just what America needs is two offenses struggling right now and two defenses that look to be kind of surging ahead.
If you want the antithesis of the game we just saw on Monday Night Football, you're going to get it here with these two teams. Kind of similar to that playoff game, honestly. It's kind of obviously, I think, how anyone would expect this game to go. I look at it pretty low scoring. I bet the under. Both really been playing solid defenses. Obviously, both teams, honestly, are coming off of really good defensive performances. The Bills just absolutely annihilated the Jets, and that pretty much started on the defensive side of the ball to help the offense. The Bills were in really the offense looked as good as ever with Matt Barkley, so I'm not sure what to take from that. It was really bizarre. No one really expected that, actually. I think the Jets were favored by 10-plus points, and the Bills actually came out looking like a better version, so... And then guess what happens? They go right back to Josh Allen. Personally, I think you have a lot of Bills fans that want to play Matt Barkley. Just they're like, hey, we want to see if we have a QB2. Let's not rush Allen back from that UCL injury after a cheap shot by Whitney Mercilus. In my opinion, was a pretty dirty play. I don't know if you guys have gotten a chance to see it. He pretty much just headbutted the elbow of Josh Allen after a throw that he completed, actually a deep throw to Kelvin Benjamin, and just no place for him to need to make that after two steps, make a headbutt into the elbow of a rookie quarterback. Thought that's what they were protecting. And you have a lot of fans that now are saying, I don't know, let's just rest him. I mean, the team looked as good as possible with Matt Barkley, so you have that fan base right now saying, you know, let's ride him out, but you know, obviously the majority and the other half are saying, nah, we have to roll with our rookie quarterback. We need him to get as many games as possible. So I mean, I've noticed, and this is something I've seen talked about a lot, was the Jags offensive line rotation. You had Leslie Frazier on today saying, like, hey, we're scheming against the Jags. We don't even know who's going to be in the lineup. Is there anything you can elaborate on that from a Jags offensive side of the ball?
Well, I can tell you that the O-lineman rotation is not from I'm trying to think of the word. They're not doing it because they want to. The Jags O-line as of late has been decimated with injuries. They're on their fourth string left tackle and Eric Flowers, who they got off waivers from the Giants, who we all know was stellar, but hasn't played horribly for Jacksonville. He's an improvement over Josh Walker, who is letting up about 9 pressures a game. They have starter Andrew Norwell, and he's been playing really well this year, despite what fans might be saying about him. He's been playing well, signed that big contract in free agency. The Jaguars lost their starting Pro Bowl center, Brandon Linder. He's out for the year, and Tyler Shatley came in. He played pretty awful last week. I believe he had like a 6.8 passing grade per PFF, so that might have been the lowest I've ever seen. AJ Cann left last week with a hamstring injury. He was replaced, and his replacement wasn't that great either. And then Jeremy Parnell, who 1 week can look like a top 10 tackle in the league, the next bottom of the league. So the shuffling of the offensive line definitely isn't due to kind of trying to create mismatches or anything. It's just literally trying to find something that will stick and hopefully at least block the opposing defensive line.
And it's affecting your run. I mean, I've always been a Leonard Fournette fan. I know he takes a little bit of heat for his yards per carry. And, you know, looking at it, I actually watched your game, Steelers, Jags game was on here, and I thought it was an interesting game. I still see Leonard Fournette at 28 carries or you know, going pretty low yards per clip. Can you elaborate on that? Is that still a line run blocking problem, or what's going on there?
Well, in the first half, it seemed like Leonard was able to find decent success. He had almost all of his yards in the first half, and I was like, okay, the offensive line looked by far better in run blocking than it did in pass blocking on the day, that's for sure. But Leonard Fournette looked good. He looked like his old self in the first half. And then the second half, the play calling just never changed. They just kept running these same inside plays, and the Pittsburgh defensive line caught on. And that's when the stuff started happening. That's when the yards per carry and the big plays and whatnot just weren't happening. So it was really a tale of two halves. The Jaguars going, I believe it was in a halftime, up 9-0, and then they eventually get a 16-0 lead, and then just can't muster any offense after that, which ends up that losing them the game because they can't chew out the clock and stop the Pittsburgh offense and giving them too many shots at the end, because we know Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers offense can thrive when they're down. So that was definitely disappointing to watch, but I think Leonard Fournette looked good. If the offensive line can block like they did in the first half, I think he has a decent chance for a good success.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's a good insight into his day, as it's, you know, kind of tough to tell, as we don't, you know, break down a lot of the Jags footage. It only can go off his 3.4 yards. And I know, you know, you had a roaring Pittsburgh comeback. It's just like they're kind of built in similar mold to New England, where it's just like, you know, it's always coming. I'm sure you feel that way as a Jags fan, right? Covering the team. Did you just feel that was coming, or did you think maybe Sunday would be different?
That is a feeling that Jags fans have never had been able to escape. No matter how much this team is up, there's always that, especially with Blake Bortles at quarterback, there's always just that voice in the back of your mind. It's like, oh, it's coming, the collapse is coming. And sure enough, it came. So it was kind of heartbreaking, because a lot of people thought maybe if they could win this Pittsburgh game, maybe they can kind of get the ball rolling a little bit, maybe try to salvage their team, as the AFC South is still up for grabs, really, for any team that goes on a hot streak. But as of right now, the Texans hold the lead, but the Colts right now, man, they're looking really good.
Definitely. So
that is Andrew Luck's back, and he's really leading that offensive line. I don't think they've let up a quarterback hit in like 5 games or something like that. So.
Yeah, it started with the Bills. Honestly, I saw Houston play. I thought the Bills absolutely destroyed them. Should have won if they had seriously had a quarterback of just like below average play. But they had the worst one ever and effectively had to cut him. The Bills were in a tough spot with Nathan Peterman. It was a guy that they, you know, decided to move away from. By the time Anderson's up to speed, gets a concussion, he's out. Josh Allen's out with his UCL injury. Matt Barkley's in, should have been brought, you know, Matt Barkley the second he was released from Cincinnati post his, you know, release from injury IR, they had worked out an IR designation. And once he became available, the Bills jumped right on him. By the time he was up to speed, Nathan Peterman is still sitting around in this locker room just because they don't have a QB2. They needed to have somebody. And of course, the guy is like a kiss of death playing behind. You know, it's kind of like Ryan Fitzpatrick, to where if the starter's in, he's either going to be bad or hurt. And, you know, Nathan Peterman kind of carries a little bit of that as well. So he came in and lost the team a good portion of games. But Houston did not look like a championship winning, or at least a division winning team. I still kind of thought that maybe Jacksonville would make a run at that, or I guess now Indianapolis has kind of taken that slot over. Is that kind of how you see your division? You see Indy catching Houston? Kind of how do you see that playing?
Yeah, actually, I placed money about 2 weeks ago on Indy winning the division, because on my bookie they had odds at plus 1,400 on the Colts winning the division, and I really like those odds. And right now it's looking like a pretty good bet at the moment. Andrew Luck's looking good. That offensive line seems to be keeping him upright, and when you can keep Luck upright in the pocket, he's going to make plays. And the defense, they got some guys like Darius Leonard that are really making plays. But I won't try to talk about the Colts too much on this Bills-Jags game, even though the Colts might be more interesting, really. But tell me a little bit, when we come back from the break, I'm gonna ask you some questions about that Bills defense, because that does seem to be the most intriguing part for me at the moment for this Bills team. Fellas, let's talk about sex. Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. BlueChew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it free. Just $5 shipping. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. And we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. All right, Kevin. So I'm just looking at some numbers here. And like I said, I don't really get a whole lot of time, or I don't really see a whole lot of Bill stuff during the year. But this guy seems to be coming up a lot is in name of Jerry Hughes. He seems to be graded pretty high on PFF with an 86. Tell me a little bit about Jerry Hughes and what he does well.
I mean, he is a guy that PFF absolutely loves. He's commonly in the top 10 in every single category. He just racks the pressures. He generally, depending on the year, he'll rack the sack. He's doing pretty well in that category this year. But teams, he honestly leads to a lot of quarterback pressures out of the pocket, future picks. I mean, he does a lot for this team. He's one of the best, probably one of the most underrated defensive ends in the league, depending on who you ask. And, you know, he's ringing in about 5.5 sacks right now. So he's been good. I mean, one player that's interesting that helps Jerry Hughes out a lot is actually Star Latulale, who takes a lot of heat for, you know, making a lot of money. Not recording a ton of statistics, but this defense has been better since they moved on from Darius. Obviously, they made that trade acquired this offseason Star Latulale and Harrison Phillips at the defensive tackle spot, and they're loaded there, picking up Jordan Phillips as well from Miami. The team's in really good shape there on their front four. Honestly, he's just like always hurt, but when Trent Murphy's playing too, he adds another dynamic pass rusher on the other end who's been pretty good in limited action. Shaq Lawson's coming in too, and they love their rotation at Eddie Yarbrough. So you're gonna have a front four that's very active. They rotate, they get after it. I mean, I think the best thing you're going to see from this unit is going to be the linebacking play. I mean, you're going to have the old Wiley vet and Lorenzo Alexander, who's just literally playing as good as ever. And then you're going to have, a young budding linebacker in Tremaine Edmonds, and just someone that's just been phenomenal for the Bills and Matt Milano at the weak side linebacker spot, who's done everything, including coverage down the field. And, I mean, he was covering, Quincy Enunwa down the field at one point, jumped in front of him, made a nice pick. So you're getting a really good, front seven here in Buffalo that, I mean, just it's the strength of the team downright. And then, I mean, you're going to plug it in with a really good safety tandem and then a good cornerback one. Really, the Bills' only weakness is CB2. And they really like their nickel cornerback and Taron Johnson, a guy, small school guy, who came in and played the slot really well for the team. So you're going to have a QB, CB1 and CB3. They'll struggle a little bit at CB2, but they think they have a solution, an undrafted free agent from Alabama, former walk-on Levi Wallace, who they really like the play of. But they're not shy to make moves at the cornerback two spot. They moved away from Philip Gaines. Obviously, they had that weird Vontae Davis retirement at halftime that had forced them to play their reserve, and Philip Gaines just caught him and said, we didn't like that play, and just started playing an undrafted free agent. But that's pretty much their weakness, if there is one. And generally, they can get away with it because whoever's playing in the slot is covered by Taron Johnson, and then the Bills will follow someone around with Trey White. So usually it's the third receiver being covered by their second cornerback, and they've gotten away with it. And anytime the Bills are in trouble, it's because their offense turns the ball over in back-to-back scenarios.
Yeah, well, I mean, good news for Bills fans is that they are going against Blake Bortles as the opposing quarterback. So you really
who they love playing last year in the playoffs. They enjoyed it. Actually, I think the whole game was him with Bortles with his legs, right? In that wild card game. That was
I think he had more rushing yards than passing yards. I think it was like,
I mean, it was him versus Tyrod running the ball. I think that's what the game turned into.
Yeah. And that just kind of shows you what both of these teams can bring, no matter what the stage is, whether it be a week 11 matchup in Buffalo, or in the playoffs in Jacksonville. So that's definitely interesting. But going back to Hughes real quick, he will be going against Eric Flowers. So that looks like a very favorable matchup for Hughes at the moment. It will be definitely interesting to see how Flowers can contain a guy like Hughes, who, going off your words, sounds like he's almost been a game wrecker, really. So that will definitely be something to look forward to. As for your cornerback, your CB2 problem, the Jaguars really don't have a CB or a wide receiver 1, 2, 3. They all just kind of shuffle in and out, and there's really no preference. If I had to pick our wide receiver 1 at the moment, it would be D.D. Westbrook. He seems to be the guy that's making the most plays this year. Dante Moncrief is hit or miss. So it'll really be interesting to see who the Bills have covering these Jags receivers, as they don't really have that defined one or two. The depth chart might have somebody, but looking at the offense, you can't really go through a scripted offense a whole lot with Blake Bortles, because sometimes he just can't make those reads. But Tre'Davious White is definitely a guy that is one of the best at his position. Young is going to be a top corner in the league for a long time. So it'll really be interesting to see how he does against guys like Dante Moncrief, who's kind of been having a rebound year this year, and D.D. Westbrook, who's in his second year but is really kind of starting to shine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing what, you know, I will actually be at this game, so I'll be interested to see what the Jags offense looks like. And I mean, I know that might sound funny, but I actually am interested to see how this game differs from that playoff matchup. I thought Jacksonville had a pretty good script in that game to do what they could to kind of neutralize anything that the Bills could do. I'm interested to see how this game plays out as a, you know, kind of a reunion with Doug Marrone. A guy that actually told Zach about, I don't know where you're going to, I'm going to ask you about this. And I didn't like, I thought he was terrible, was Nathaniel Hackett. I don't know where Jags fans or Jags media guys stand with this guy. When he was in Buffalo, I don't think I could have disliked a coordinator more. I know he had his moments last year of being pretty solid. I told Zach it was coming. Where do you kind of stand on Nathaniel Hackett? Is that someone you soured on, or is it like, no, he's someone we see the light with?
I was calling for both coordinators to be axed in the bye week. So okay. That is kind of where I stand. I've been a little more lenient with Hackett as of late. There's a lot of times that his play calling could be better, but then I have to remember what quarterback he's chained to and how much sure. That can kind of really limit a guy, an offensive coordinator's play call. So I've kind of given him a little rope. I've almost been tempted to just say, get one more quarterback under you. Maybe you only give him like a year or two max, but maybe give him somebody that's not Blake Bortles and see how he does. Because when Cody Kessler played for a half this year, the offense looked better. They were calling up more creative plays. They were making throws. They were moving the ball. So it almost seems to be solely on Blake Bortles' shoulders at this point, which obviously isn't a very good problem to have, because they gave him that extension this offseason, which I honestly think he should be gone after this year. You just have to swallow the dead cap, swallow your pride, and just move on, because he shouldn't be on this roster next year. But Nathaniel Hackett's definitely a guy that I'm not like super excited to be about. And if they were to fire him after this week or beyond, I probably wouldn't really shed a tear, to be honest, because I'm just almost at this point just kind of waiting and embracing for change.
Okay, no, that's fair enough. And you guys have generally been, maybe I'm speaking for Zach, I'm not sure, been pro Bortles. Is that something new for you, or is that something you've never been?
Going into this year, last year in the playoffs, I was like, okay, it looks like Blake might finally be turning the corner. And then this past offseason, when they signed the extension, I didn't hate it. I will say that it's a cold take now. I was a fan of the extension. I thought it looks like he might be finally getting his groove. He's finally hitting that stride. They signed him to a pretty affordable team-friendly deal at the time for the way he was playing. So I was for it, but obviously as the season has gone on, the problems have become much more apparent, and that he was definitely a lot of people could have told you that he was carried by the defense and run game last year. But he seemed to kind of compliment it a little bit. This year, it's completely apparent now that he is the root of almost all of the Jaguars' offensive problems.
Now at 3-7, why not take an approach? I mean, not that the Bills have done anything great at quarterback. They did find someone, in my opinion, who they could find a quarterback two in. Why aren't the Jags taking a similar approach, kind of looking for their a la Matt Barkley, someone that could be a QB2 for them long term? Like, why not go to Kessler?
That is a question that probably almost every Jags fan is asking themselves week in and week out. Just when Cody Kessler came in a few weeks ago, it was almost like, all right, this is it. The Bortles experiment might finally be over. We have Cody Kessler coming in, and he looked good as well as a guy could for really getting his first starter snaps in Jacksonville. And then after Cody Kessler almost leads the team to a comeback win against the Texans, they immediately come out and say Blake Bortles is the starter. and then that week after that plays horribly. The week after that plays not very good. There hasn't been really any good play from Blake Bortles. In London, he played decent. But just after that, it's just like you can't do anything on offense with Blake Bortles. And then this week, they've already announced him as the starter, which definitely has irked fans. And it wouldn't surprise me if it's causing a rift in the locker room. I said after the Steelers game last week that the Jags defense might boycott if Blake Bortles is named the starter this week. So it would be really interesting to see how the team reacts, because I can tell you that tensions are probably very high, and it's probably the trust level within the offense or from the defense to the offense is probably really thin.
Yeah, I mean, it's something the Bills actually experienced. Like the Bills defense, obviously in a similar boat, you know, being ranked one or two in most categories and having to come out with Nathan Peterman. I think they got to a point where they were going to stop playing football if that guy was trotted out there, and thus they turned to a guy in Derek Anderson who had been here 7 days, and then to Matt Barkley who had been here 9 days himself. And they honestly played pretty good underneath those guys, but underneath Peterman, it's almost like this team was like, we're just not going to play football anymore. Like, there's no use. Like, you guys don't care. So I'm interested to see what kind of emotions happen in this game. I think the Bills feel like they've corrected some issues. They're pretty healthy, which is a good or a bad thing. They're 3-7. They've been decimated at the quarterback position, but pretty good everywhere else in the entire team. I wouldn't say they're coming in with a single other injury, at least at this point of note. So it's one of those games where I want to see what Jacksonville, how they look defensively. Is it like Blake Bortles is going to have to come out and play, and according to predictions, about a 30-degree game in really windy Buffalo with probably some form of elements? I'd be shocked if there wasn't. How do you see that going? Do you think you could turn to Kessler? Would this be the game, or would it be post game, or are they just going to ride out Bortles to the bitter end?
I mean, it would be. If anything, the elements and stuff are probably just going to give this Jaguars coaching staff or franchise just another excuse as to why Bortles gets another week, to be honest.
Okay.
So we'll probably end up just seeing a ground and pound game from the Jaguars offense like they tried to do this past week, eclipsing, I believe it was almost 200 yards, or it might have been over 200 yards rushing. That's what they try to do. That's literally their whole philosophy. And now that they have Carlos Hyde in the backfield now, to kind of take a little bit of the weight off Leonard Fournette, it wouldn't surprise me if the Jaguars tried to run the ball 50 times this week between the weather in Buffalo, the wind, and just the struggles at quarterback.
Sure. I mean, it's funny. The Bills do really well against big backs. They shut them down. I mean, it's something that they're very good in. The one position I could see, and I mean, you could speak to this, is TJ Yeldon. He's a guy I've always personally liked. So I seem to like your running back core. I don't love Carlos Hyde, but I do like your other two a lot. I like Leonard Farr, like I've mentioned earlier. And I do like TJ Yeldon. I tried to get you guys to trade him to us at some point last year when it looked like he might be a guy you could move. But obviously I think he's a pretty good player. They struggle. If they struggle anywhere, it's in the pass game with running backs. They can cover the tight end. They've done that really well this season. They've done a really good job in receivers. I think their quarterback fantasy points allowed are really low. I think it's bottom of the league. But they struggle against that pass catching running back. I mean, just obviously Deion Lewis, one of the best in the biz. At that, and as well as can be one of the best in the biz, as well as James White. So, you know, a couple of those names and TJ Yeldon, if they use them. So would you think that they would try to do something like that then, if they're trying to keep it out of Bortles' hands?
Well, I mean, I would hope so. TJ right. Yeldon is probably, in his first few years in Jacksonville were rough. He had a lot of fumble issues. Just couldn't ever really make it as that RB1 on the ground. He was kind of drafted right when pass catching running backs were becoming a thing. So there wasn't really an offense built around him. They kind of really just drafted him to be the running back in between the tackles with a pass catching ability. But towards the end of last year and the beginning of this year, he had looked really good. Had cut down on those fumbles. Was catching the ball really well, was moving the ball between the tackles really well. And then this is where it goes back to Hackett, would just stop giving him the ball after like series of success. And like in a game, maybe the first half he would dominate, second half would basically just isolate him and take him out of the game, which has been really frustrating. So it'll be interesting to see how they can incorporate Yeldon. But kind of speaking on Yeldon in the future terms, I think I've often called Yeldon as the consolation prize in free agency this year, or this upcoming offseason, he will be the consolation to whoever doesn't get Le'Veon Bell. I think he's going to get paid offseason. Le'Veon obviously being the number one pass catching back that hit free agency this year. But I think Yeldon will be a good team's number two on whoever misses out on the Le'Veon sweepstakes.
And what's funny about this game, I want to make one final nugget for you guys. The Bills are allowing the least amount of fantasy points to quarterback and receiver. And I think tight end might be the fewest too. I'd have to check on that one. No one's going to enjoy this fantasy game at all, right? Like we've got nothing going on in this. You have two running back ones in McCoy coming off a great game. He's got his stuff figured out finally. And then obviously Fournette's back and healthy, who I'm going to imagine they're going to pound the rock might get played, be playable in that factor alone. So not what everyone wants to see after that Monday night game, right?
Oh yeah, it's going to, like you said, the antithesis of that Monday night game. But when we come back from this break, Kevin and I will give our final score predictions and any last nuggets that we feel you guys need to know about this riveting AFC matchup. Winter is coming and nobody has you prepared like Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures up to 135 degrees and are powered by rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion batteries that last up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone and any other gadget while you're wearing them. Perfect for any friend or family on that holiday gift list that might be getting cold a little bit too easily. But they're also great for anyone who works outdoors, skiers and snowboarders, or anybody that just loves the outdoors or hates being cold. Action Heat provides toasty warmth and comfort for your entire body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts and long johns. Action Heat is available in men's and women's, and have great new styles and models just released for this winter season. Make winter activities more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you toasty and warm, even in the most frigid winter weather. We've got a special deal for our listeners to save 20% off your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon. Or use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Stay toasty warm while enjoying all your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. And we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. All right, Kevin. So you're saying the weather's not going to probably be great in Buffalo this week. Both offenses are struggling. Both defenses are playing strongly. What do you think the score is going to be like in this thing?
Okay, what's funny about this is I've officially, except last week I predicted, or 2 weeks ago we had the bye, the Bills to beat the Jets. Prior to that, I think I was over, or I went 9 straight picking against the Bills. I didn't like any of their matchups. They played the strongest strength of schedule in the league through that. Didn't come out of it very good. They now have one of the weakest strength of schedules coming up in this last 6. Unfortunately for the team, they didn't get through the first stretch. This doesn't matter. Really thought we had something here, man. I thought that we had some type of small rivalry. I know our fan base goes back and forth. That was pretty much squashed after a 3-7 start by both teams, ending any hope in a rematch or any type of wild card implications or any of that. That just, I think, out the window. I think just because it's in Buffalo, they do take it, especially, you know, now that they've kind of figured out what to do at quarterback after that Derek Anderson and Nathan Peterman saga. You're going to get at least competent play. Josh Allen's been okay, and Matt Barkley was good. I think it's going to be 17-13 Buffalo. And that's only if it's Buffalo. I would actually absolutely flip that score if it was down there in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the Bills on this one too. It seems like every week that I pick the Jaguars, they go and disappoint me. This past week, I gave them an edge victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers, gave them a little bit more benefit in the offense column, but the win margin was almost exactly spot on, except it was for the wrong team. So they seem to disappoint me week in and week out, but I think the Bills are really going to have that home field advantage being in the cold. Although nobody really likes to play in the cold, the Bills, I'm sure, are much more accustomed to it than the Jaguars, especially Leonard Fournette, who absolutely hates the cold.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
That'll be interesting to see. Maybe he'll run harder so he can get to the bench and get his jacket back on. But my score prediction is almost similar to yours. I'm thinking 16-13 in favor of the Bills. The Bills, I think, are going to either get a bunch of field goals or they might get a few touchdowns and a field goal, maybe miss like an extra point or something due to the wind and something like that. So not expecting a whole lot of offense from both teams, a defensive effort nonetheless, whether it be good defense or just really, really bad offense due to the conditions and just the offense is being bad. So 16-13 in favor of the Bills is my prediction, as much as Jags fans are going to hate saying that. The Jags basically at this point have to prove that they can win a game.
Sure. And I mean, one nugget, and it has nothing to do with anything more than the Bills actually being 6-2 at home last year. They're a pretty decent home team. They really do. Something that, you know, Bills fans enjoy, that the weather, it isn't great. And, you know, it isn't a true home field advantage when the players themselves don't have experience in it. But something the team does, they practice outside, they're used to the field, they're used to the wind elements. The Bills have a really dynamic kicker and really racing another good year in Steven Hauschka. I mean, he can make a field goal from anywhere. It's a bummer that, you know, he's not needed in big spots right now. The team's either blowing them out or getting blown out, but he's making all of his kicks. He might be the best Bills beside McCoy, their best offensive weapon. He's been in a year that's been bad with kickers. You're right. I mean, he could be something that sets them apart in this game. He's been pretty good. I noticed Josh Lambeau has been all right too, right?
Yeah, Josh Lambeau probably has been one of the most consistent kickers in the league the last 2 years.
Well, we got a kicker off.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure both kickers are absolutely going to be thrilled for the frigid temperatures and high winds in Buffalo. So it'll be interesting to see how they can fare against that. I know Josh Lambeau's only field goal miss last year came in a windy, cold Cleveland game. So that'll be interesting to see. Hopefully both kickers, for our sakes, perform, because we can only have so much misery in a football game. But I think that'll just about do it for this Locked On crossover between the Bills and Jaguars, previewing this Sunday's game at Buffalo. Kevin, thanks for coming on. Be sure to give one last plug to both fans so the Jaguars know who to follow this week for Bills-related stuff, and I'll give you guys my stuff as well.
Sure thing. At Locked On Bills and myself at Kevin Messeri. I always enjoy the Jags, man. I always like the rivalry. I'm just so bummed that it's probably going to die here. But I've always enjoyed the friendly banter of how many Bills fans are actually at that playoff game. That's something I thoroughly enjoy. I've heard anything from like 1 to like 100,000. So I thoroughly enjoy that banter. So once again, you can find me at Kevin Messeri or at Locked On Bills.
Yeah, friendly banter definitely makes stuff better. Yeah, that's definitely a topic that, if depending who you ask, you'll get a completely different answer in Jacksonville. But you can, for any Bills fans that want to find or follow any Jack stuff throughout the week, you can follow myself on Twitter at MistoCristofo. It's kind of a weird handle, so be sure to just look at the Locked On Jaguars page at Locked On Jaguars, and you'll be able to find me in the description. I'm the really long, complicated handle. And be sure to tune into Jaguars and Bills this Sunday to see maybe anything that we talked about, if we were even remotely close. And we'll catch up with you guys later.